Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are Stephen Scott, Sean Priest, and Tim Schwartz.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. This is your veritable smorgasbord of technology news with me, Stephen Scott. With me, as always, are my trusty compadres. I have Sean Priest. Hello.
Hello, Stephen Scott. How are you?
I am fine, thank you, Sean. Also, Tim Schwartz is back with us again. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. Hi, Sean. How are you guys doing?
Can't speak for him, but I'm feeling good.
All good.
Yeah, are you all right, Tim? Because I know you got up at a ridiculously early hour of the morning to be part of this program.
I do, actually, but I'm doing pretty good this morning. Not too bad, so...
Sound a bit rough, Tim. I'll be honest with you.
Charming.
Sounding a little rough? Well, I haven't slept very much yet, but that's okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. Well, listen, lots to get through on the program, as always. We have got so much to cram in here. We only have an hour. I keep saying this. Write to your senator and your MP. But yes, we only have an hour. But we'll get on with it. We're going to touch on something that we actually got to last week. We got an email in last week from one of our listeners who asked the question about different ways that we could learn JAWS. And there are a number of resources out there. I thought we'd go through some of those today just to help anyone out who wants to know how to learn JAWS. As I say, lots of resources, but it's often hard to find them. And, you know, I'll be honest, even though we've found quite a few resources, a lot of them, guys, aren't very, what I would call, dummy-friendly, me being the dummy in this case.
Well, exactly. When someone's just starting off, you want something easy to find, for one thing, and, you know, something really accessible comes to mind, I suppose, is the word we're looking for.
Yeah, well, that's right, accessible, and something that's you know, is understandable for people like me. Tim, you use NVDA, don't you? And that tends to have good tutorials kicking around.
Well, I actually do use both. NVDA I've only been using maybe for the last year or two. JAWS I've actually been using for about 10, so I'm more familiar with JAWS. But yes, you're right, there seems to be a lot more tutorials available for NVDA that are simpler to understand or simple to use. JAWS, it gets to be a little bit more complicated. But yes, there are things available out there. You just have to find them.
Yeah, that's the problem. Also, we're going to be joined by Claire Potter again. Potter's Picks this week tells us different ways we can contribute to Tech Talk. That's interesting.
Well, it saves us work, so I'm all for that one. Contribute as much as you can.
Absolutely.
Yes. In that case, I love it. Also, Robin Christofferson's back with another in his series called Dot to Dot, telling us some of those all-important Echo skills. If you've got an Echo Dot or you've got the Amazon Echo Big, as I call it.
Wrongly. Incorrectly. That's not what it's called, but that's what Stephen calls it.
Yeah, that's what I call it. I don't care. I don't
obviously, you don't
Amazon.
Care.
And
yes.
Listen, if Jeff Bezos wants some ideas, yeah, you know, I'll give him a hand. We've also got the news coming up as well, some new places to get audiobooks, and also a story that we actually missed last week. Guys.
I missed nothing. How dare you? What is it?
yeah. Well, let's see. We'll talk later about it in the news, but a story we should have definitely been talking about last week. Anyway, we've got the emails coming in as well. Lots of you giving us your emails. But we're kind of going to start with news because there is a lot of it. And there's two big stories really doing the rounds. The first one, of course, is that the Apple HomePod is now available. Well, it's available to pre-order, I think, at this point.
Hurrah!
Yeah, is it? I don't know.
No, not really.
I have read so many reviews on this one, and for those who don't know what it is, it's a smart speaker. It's like your Amazon Echo, I suppose, although not as capable. That's one way of putting it.
Bias. Prejudge.
Well, it isn't. It's not got as many skills and things. I mean, if you've got an Amazon Echo, even an Echo Big, or an Echo Medium, or an Echo Small, whatever one you've got in the range, or an Echo with a screen, you're probably not going to want to switch it over to a HomePod. However, let me explain. The HomePod seems to have been, from my understanding, built for the music market. It's built for Apple Music, really. A lot of people calling it the iPod for the home. It's not really designed, I don't think, to do all the smart stuff, although that will probably come, a bit like when the iPhone came out, remember? No apps at all.
Exactly, yeah.
So maybe one day we'll get the apps. But what do you think, guys? I mean, does this appeal? Is it too late to market for this? Is it? I don't know.
I don't think it's too late to market. I think that Apple being the big player, being the big company that they are, if anybody's going to be able to get into this market at this point, they are the company that could do it. And as far as the lack of apps, like you said, when the iPhone first launched, there were no apps. When the Echoes launched, there weren't as many skills, and that grew over time. So I think as apps / skills, whatever they're going to call it, for the HomePod are developed and released, I think that it could catch up with an Echo. And they are saying that you can still ask it the basic questions you can ask an Echo, things like asking it for conversions and its basic information, you know, those kind of questions that you can ask an Echo already right out of the box without skills. So as they add more to it with apps or skills, I think that it is something that could be competitive. The price hits me a little bit hard because it is going to be, I think, £319 in the UK, I believe, £399 in the US, £349 in the US. Yep. And so that's a little bit rough. But as you said, Stephen, they're trying to make it be a high-end music player to compete with a Sonos-type device instead of the music from an Echo. So I think that's probably why the price point.
Okay. Yes, everything Tim said is perfectly valid and correct.
Thank you.
I've got concerns. Look, it's hard to write off Apple with anything. But as Stephen said, this is a speaker first. The smarts are an add-on, a bolt-on. So this is primarily about the sound. They want it was something to go up against the Sonos, I think, primarily. So yes, the sound is going to be good. It better be for that price. Of course, we got the Google Max as well. The same sort of price range, same sort of market, really. It's all about the sound, good sound. But I don't know if people are going to pay that sort of money with the likes of Amazon and Google. The voice assistant part of it is important now. Well, you know, the amount of technology we saw at CES with the voice assistants built in, we know people love this stuff. Is just having great sound enough now? Sonos have Sonos added Alexa into their system now as well?
They do have one.
Yeah, you can use, if you've got the Echo Dot, you can pair it up with the Sonos speaker, or you can buy the Sonos One, which has got her built in.
Yeah. So, you know, even Sonos are saying that this is an important, we've got to give this as an option. So, okay, a couple of concerns. There's limitations. Does it support Bluetooth? I don't think it does.
No.
So there is a huge limitation for me right there. Only supports AirPlay, not AirPlay 2 either.
Yeah, that's a mistake. That's a serious failing.
Exactly. There's a few limitations here. If it's going to be a speaker, you've got to have that Bluetooth support so you can connect whatever device you want to connect to it, not just AirPlay. And definitely, if you're going to put AirPlay only, give your latest version, AirPlay 2. So I'm rambling on. I've got to say, I'm concerned about this. I won't be buying it, but I am interested to hear how it sounds. I'm sure it's going to sound fantastic. Just too rich for my blood.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the cost side is one thing, right? £319, as Tim says. That's a lot of cash to put out. One of the things that's quite amusing, and I'm not mentioning this for any other reason than just because it is amusing, is Sonos have launched a deal where you get two Sonos Ones, that is the speakers that have got Alexa built in, for the price of one HomePod, which actually isn't true because it's £349. And my HomePod is £319, so I don't know quite how they figured that one out. But basically, you get £50 off. They're £200 each. So if you buy two together, you get £50 knocked off the total price. Now, that's an interesting way of doing it because, you know, Sonos are obviously competing. And I think that is definitely the market here. That is where this is. It's not really at the Amazon Echo Dot level at all. However, there are two things with this. I think expectation is a big thing. I think people expect more now than they used to. I think if this had come out 5 years ago, we'd be jumping all over it. We'd be saying, this is the most amazing thing ever. Look at this. It's incredible. But because we've got the Amazon Echo, because we've got Google Home Minis, because we've got the Google Max coming out, because of all the technology that's already there and that we can talk to, and we're used to how it works, then I think this might fall short of people's expectations. And secondly, is sound everything? For people like us, And I see us as in the geeky types.
How dare you?
If there's a, yes, I'm talking about you. But you know, are people out there as bothered about the sound as we would be? So I've got a friend who I call her the minister's wife because she's married to a minister, and she is. I mean, I obviously give her a real name, but for the purposes
makes
of
sense.
This conversation, yeah, I call her by her real name every other day of the week. But as far as this show is concerned, we'll call her the minister's wife, and she's just got herself an Amazon Echo Dot. Very small, of course. Speaker, we would probably say, not that great. She loves it for listening to music. So people's way of using things are different. And not everyone's an audiophile. And it has to be the best of the best. So, you know, for some people, this might just be, to use Sean's words, too rich.
Yeah. People who like their sound are not going to worry about the price, as you said, Stephen. You know, you've got a Sonos yourself. You know, you love the sound of it. It does sound amazing. I'm sure the HomePod is going to be in the same class, same as the Google Max is meant to be. But for me, it's just not that important. I'm more focused, I suppose, on the abilities of it. And again, going back to the HomePod, Siri is so behind everything else. And that's another concern. Are they going to update that enough? Is it powerful enough to, I don't know, just to compete with everything else? I know it's not about the smarts, it is about the sound, but still, if you're going to add that on, then at least make it comparable to the others.
And if I'm being honest, guys, I'm probably a combination of the two of you, because I want good quality sound for my music, but I also want that good functionality of a home assistant. I want it to do everything and more that an Echo can do, at the same time sounding fantastic. And if it can sound as good as a Sonos and be as functional or more than an Echo, I'm intrigued. Now, I only say I'm intrigued because even at the price point that it is, it's still a little high for me, honestly. Even with that, knowing it could maybe compete with the Sonos, could be as good or better than that sound and everything. And even if it does get all these apps or whatever later down the line to compete with Echo Skills, I still feel, like you said, Sean, that it is a little bit rich for me. Even wanting all that and expecting and knowing all that, it's a little high. So, I mean, if it was a little lower, I don't know how much. I don't know what I would throw at them as a price point, but if it was just a little bit lower, maybe I'd be more interested. But it's something I'm definitely going to watch. I'm going to keep my eye on. I'm not going to run out and buy one immediately, but I might give it 6 months, maybe even give it a year and see how it goes, see how it works its way in with all the other ones out there and what gets added to it, and eventually get one, but not right away yet.
Okay, here's what I am with this. I'm going to put a Sonos One next to a HomePod and find out which is best when they come out. That's what I want to do. Because if the Sonos One even sounds the same, never mind better, if it sounds the same as the HomePod, then it's just a no-brainer. For a couple of reasons. The Sonos One will shortly support AirPlay 2.
Yes.
How bizarre is that? They're going to announce that as a feature quite soon, if they haven't already. But it is coming. As will they be able to input into that the Google Assistant as well. So you won't just have the option to use Alexa, you can use the Google Home style, or the Google Assistant, as it's called. I mean, that changes it up as well. And again, you can save 119 quid to the bargain. So, yeah, I think the choice seems obvious to me, but we'll just have to see how good it actually sounds. And that may make people's views change, but certainly from a features point of view, from day one, the Sonos, to me, is the better bargain. Okay, I'd love your thoughts on these things. If you have decided to buy one, have you pre-ordered one? Are you buying one? Tell us, and tell us what you think of it if you do get one. I know a few blind people on Twitter asking that question, not getting any response. So, TechTalk at rnib.org.uk. Another big story, of course, VFO, which is now the company that owns everything, isn't it? Does it not just own everything in the sight loss world? It's got Jaws. They've got ZoomText now, the AI Squared company. Optelec is in there. Well, now they've bought another firm called Enhanced Vision. These guys make magnifiers and magnification equipment, CCTVs and all that. is the market getting smaller, guys? Do we think it needs to start getting more? I mean, I've seen this from the UK point of view in terms of media with this whole deal with Sky and 21st Century Fox, where all these companies seem to be buying each other in order to survive, essentially, against the bigger threats. I mean, in media, it's Amazon and Netflix. With technology, it seems to be Apple, Samsung and Google and companies like that.
It does make me nervous when a company like VFO does seem to swallow up the competition, basically. I mean, competition's always a good thing. But again, sort of a running theme we keep coming back to is this sort of specialist tech. You know, the market is getting smaller as more and more of your mainstream devices can handle things that you needed a specialized device for before through an app. Then, you know, the market's getting smaller. Could these companies survive anyway without VFO, you know, acquiring them anyway? Would these companies just go under? So I don't know. It does make me slightly nervous to think that one company is sort of taking over this sort of field. But I don't know if there's an alternative. I think we're coming to that sort of time where the market is changing.
Yeah, that is the good and the bad of it, isn't it? That this kind of specialist tech, I think, still has a place for blind and visually impaired people. We've talked about that quite a bit, you know, lately here on the show. But that being said, as you were talking about, Sean, when other mainstream devices come out or apps come out that can do the same thing for free or very, very inexpensive compared to some of this specialist tech, it does make it hard for these types of companies to stay in business, especially the smaller ones. And so it becomes very easy to get gobbled up by a bigger company like that. I do agree that competition is best anywhere that you can have it. That usually keeps prices down, keeps, you know, competition going for the market. It's good for the consumer to have that competition. But with the advent of all this other mainstream tech that we have that does it, you know, it really is going to make it hard for these specialist tech companies to even stay alive, let alone be able to have multiples of them to compete.
Interesting times. Well, tell us your thoughts. We'd love to hear them. We'll certainly be following that story. The news just breaking as we recorded here on Tech Talk. But yeah, an interesting story. And we shall see what that means for the business. I mean, we probably won't know what it means for a couple of years' time. But, you know, so far we've seen not massive changes. In fact, if anything else, we've seen a bit more cohesion between products like Zoom Text and JAWS. So maybe there are some benefits to this. Bringing the cost down would be nice. Well, that's a new idea.
Yes.
Right, anyway. So yeah. I had to say it. Okay, now, a lot of you have been in touch with ideas, hints, and tips on how to help others to learn JAWS. And we had an email last week from one of our listeners who asked, you know, where do I find materials to learn JAWS? Well, we've been looking around. I have to say the best source, it seems, is the Freedom Scientific website itself. Freedomscientific.com is a great website. And if you search on that for training downloads, and that will bring up a whole section on JAWS, and it will explain to you how to read and how to learn the basics and understand the commands of JAWS. It is one of those things, you know, I said, and I always make the joke about, you know, oh, it's such a complicated program and, you know, so much to it. There is a lot to it. And we've decided here that we're going to make a bit of a tutorial for everybody so that, you know, we can sort of get the basics down. Because I think this is the problem with JAWS, guys. I find that people sort of jump in with, well, I mean, you can do this, you can do that, you can do the next thing. Yeah, that's all fine, but how do I open a web browser? How do I, you know, get to the desktop? How do I find out what that notification says? It's just about learning those basic skills. And I think once you've got that, the rest should, you know, be a bit easier to go to overcome. So freedomscientific.com, search for training downloads. There is another website called the JAWS List, and it's actually JAWS users who sort of contribute to this. And this, I would say, is much more for when you're into learning JAWS or you've got past the basics and you want to learn a bit more, especially on how to use programs, because, of course, we don't just spend our lives as blind people running about the desktop. Occasionally, we might want to open an app and do something. So on that basis, JAWS-users.com is a great website to try out. That's a JAWS List website. And also, if you want to put some money into it, it's often the case, then there is a paid training bundle from JAWS, again at freedomscientific.com. Search for training bundles. training bundles. You'll find that at freedomscientific.com. And just while I'm mentioning it, I did mention NVDA. There are some great tutorials available for you there. If you go to josephsl.net/tutorials, josephsl.net/tutorials, that is where you'll find NVDA plus Windows 10 tutorials as well. And for anyone out there who wants to learn VoiceOver, the screen reader on the iPhone or the iPad, then do check out David Woodbridge's VoiceOver podcasts. David Woodbridge, brilliant guy, been doing this for a long, long time, and brilliant. You'll find him on the website visionaustralia.org. So hopefully that helps, and you know, helps everyone find some ways. And if you find more resources, do tell us about them. We'll share them with everybody else, and that means I don't have to do any work. I like
Wow, that. You covered everything, Steve. I'm impressed. I'm shocked. You've impressed me twice. I've got to say, just a quick note, blind abilities as well. They've just started a iPhone 101 series of podcast.
That's right.
So if if you're just getting used to VoiceOver, that's definitely worth a listen. So that's on blindabilities.com.
It's a great website. Yeah. Okay. I think it's time to find out about some of the latest skills that are out there from the Echo Dot. Robin Christofferson has a series now. A series which, I must say, was born on this program.
Every time. He can't leave it alone.
Well, it was born on this program.
It was.
And we gave birth to the Dot to Dot podcast. It's my child. I'm seeing it through life. And showing Robin the way. So Robin's now doing this podcast every week, and it's fantastic. I think he's got about 8 billion skills on
every
there that
day.
He's managed to review so far. Yeah, every day another one appears. So here's another one from his series Dot to Dot.
Dot to Dot. Now connected.
Hello, it's Robin here. I am going to demonstrate a fantastic skill called 20 questions, and this is the first skill that I've seen is the developer is Amazon itself, which might explain why the skill is so good. I think it should be enabled by default, but anyway, you can enable it in the normal way by asking the A lady to enable the 20 questions skill. Now what you have to do here is before you start, you have to think of a thing. It could be an animal, a vegetable, a mineral, and a mineral would be anything that isn't an animal or a vegetable, although it does offer you the categories of other and I think I don't know. But anyway, the question one will always be if it's animal, vegetable, mineral, or other, and from then on you just answer yes or no or I don't know. Now I'm going to think of something. I've done so many things. I've done scissors, I've done a bear, I've done a garden shed, I've done a beach ball, and it's got them all right. Let's think of a clown. Just, I don't know where that came from, but anyway, that's what we're going to do. Alexa, play 20 questions.
Let's do this. Question 1. Animal, vegetable, mineral, other, or unknown?
Animal.
Question 2. Can it climb?
I don't know.
Question 2. Is it used by the police?
No.
Question 3. Is it furry?
No.
Question 4. Does it weigh more than a duck?
Yes.
Question 5. Is it a mammal?
Yes.
Question 6. Is it originally from Canada?
No.
Question 7. Is it used in travel?
No.
Question 8. Can you see it in a zoo?
No.
Question 9. Can it save your life?
I don't know.
Question 9. Is it clever?
Yes.
Question 10. Can you play games with it?
Yes.
Question 11. Can it be used for recreation?
Yes.
Question 12. Can you find it in a church?
No.
Question 13. Does it provide protection?
No.
Question 14. Is it multicolored?
Yes.
Question 15. Can you find it in a house?
No.
Question 16. Is it comforting?
I don't know.
Question 16. Is it originally from Africa?
No.
Question 17. I am guessing that it is a clown.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
I win. Told ya. Please check your Alexa app for your game summary. Goodbye.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe it. You have just witnessed what is most amazing about this game. Not only that it's completely spooky, that it actually gets it right, but that it gets it right out of the blue. I mean, where did that come from? This is such an awesome skill, and you guys are going to have hours of fun playing this. It is absolutely amazing, and that's been my experience with the other rounds as well. The answer just comes literally out of the blue. Whew. So yeah, this is Robin signing off from the Echo Chamber, and have a great week.
Now disconnected.
Okay, I think it's time to get Claire Potter on, guys. Claire, of course, is head of Potter's Picks, our section where we talk about technology under 150 quid. It used to be under 100, but Claire insisted, guys, that we raise the budget. So, yeah, we've done it. So 150 quid, that's what you've got to play with every week, Claire. And this week, it's all about voice recording, isn't it?
It sure is about voice recording. So I'll be telling you all how to record yourselves. And I don't just mean smartphones. I'll be telling you how you can record yourselves and then share that with the rest of the world, such as Tech Talk, so that you can contribute to this amazing programme. And we're going to be focusing mainly on iPhones today, but we've also got a standalone voice recorder as well that you can use.
So what's your first?
Right, okay. My first one is called the Olympus DM5 voice recorder. Okay, this recorder can be used to create high-quality recordings. It features tactile buttons and is fully TTS supported. This one is quite hard to obtain, but to get the fully accessible version, you can get it from Vitech Solutions. And to get in touch with them, you need to ring them up. And the number is 0343-289-7501. What do you think of this?
What I love about it is it's mainstream tech, but it has got accessibility built in. And Olympus, I think, are the only company that have really thought about this and actually done it quite well. Okay, Claire, so all sounds good, but how much does it cost?
Okay, this one is right on the budget. You just cannot get any higher than that. It's exactly £150.
Oh, on the nose. Right, okay.
She's good. There you go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Right, okay, what's number two on your list?
Right, okay, number two is a really good app for your iPhone, and this is called Just Press Record. Fully accessible with VoiceOver, this app allows you to make high-quality recordings, and you can also share them using email and other available options. To obtain this one, you go to the App Store, and it's $4.99. All you do is just use a two-finger double tap to stop and start recording. So it's got a really nice, simple interface, but it's a really, really good app, and it makes it sound really nice and professional as well. So when you record yourself and you listen back to it, it sounds like you're actually in a studio, even though you're only just using your phone, just your iPhone.
Yeah, really good app, actually. And what I love about it is it transcribes as well. There's a one little fact.
It?
Yeah, it does.
I used that and I didn't even know.
Yeah, it's got transcription, so it'll actually take the text of what you say, assuming it can understand you, and assuming, I guess you would need to do a bit of editing on it afterwards, but generally it will work. And, it means you can capture the text of your conversation as well. Handy for phone numbers, handy for email addresses that you might get in the course of recording. I can imagine a lot of lecturers, people sitting in lecture theatres using these could be really, really useful. What I also love about this, just a fun fact about it, is This app is made in Inverurie in Scotland, which is a tiny little part of the world. And, you know, I've had a chat with the developers actually about this app because, you know, I'm keen to get them on the show, but I think also it's important to congratulate people when they do such a great job in terms of accessibility, and they admit that they've
really thought about VoiceOver, haven't they?
They've really thought about VoiceOver, and one thing that I love about this is that the Apple Watch version is quite a visual app, the Just Press Record. It's quite visual in its operations. But if you turn VoiceOver on, there's a different interface that they've built just for blind people. Fully accessible. So really good stuff.
Well, I have actually listened to someone who do a recording on an Apple Watch, and it sounds really, really good.
Okay, what's number three on your list then, Claire?
Right, so my final item is again for your iPhone, and this is called the Shure Motive MV88 Stereo Condenser Microphone. This is a really portable microphone. It comes in a really nice little carrying case. And it connects to iPads, iPod Touch devices, and iPhones, which have a Lightning port. It can be used with the free Motive app to control it, or you can use it with third-party apps to record yourself. So, for example, Just Press Record. I know it definitely works with that. So if you want to get this one, it's £119 from Apple.
Yeah, really good microphone. Well, I know about this microphone only too well. I think I told you about it, actually, Claire Porter. But it's a brilliant app, brilliant microphone.
Yeah, I just copied you, Stephen. I actually got the microphone, and it's really good. I've used it quite a few times, and I'm impressed.
Well, it's got its own app, which, you know, is accessible to a point. There are a few things with it that don't quite go as planned, but it is a good app, and the microphone quality is great.
Very, very professional.
Well, it is, and there's a lot of functionality to it. It is a really good microphone. If you're wanting to record a group conversation, you've got that option. Or if you want to record just yourself, or, you know, you maybe record music, then it's good for that. So, yeah, really lots of great functions in this. Okay, Claire, well, thank you so much once again for your Porter's Picks. What have you got next week?
Right, next week I am doing lighting.
Right, lighting it is. Okay, well, I look forward to hearing your three items under £150. Claire, thank you as always.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Claire. Right, it's time for this, guys.
News from the internet.
I'm bored of that jingle already. Right, okay, let's get some news.
I love that jingle.
Stephen.
I get bored so easily. It's terrible. Right, okay, I don't know about you guys, I like an audiobook, and one of the great things, it seems, I was reading an article this morning, actually, just before we came into the studio, about in America, there is a huge amount of interest in getting audiobooks out there to people. Walmart, apparently, have bought over a company called Ratuken.
Who?
And this is really interesting, because this company used to be, I think in the UK, they used to sell under the name Play. Remember that website?
Yeah,
John. Yes, buy CDs from there. But yeah, their parent company is Ratuken. That's been bought over by Walmart, and they're going to start selling audiobooks. Of course, Apple do audiobooks, and Google are now getting into the audiobook world, and it's all to compete with Audible and Amazon. This could be great news for us. Because, you know, if prices start to come down, I mean, I know at the moment there's subscription options with Audible, which do make it a bit cheaper. But if you can get more books, less cost, fantastic. But at least in the UK, our competition will be in the form of Google Play Store. Audiobooks coming, and it's going to be great. Apparently, we're going to have lots of books to listen to. And knowing Google, I mean, their prices generally around music are quite reasonable. Hopefully, the books will be the same.
Well, we got so much choice when it comes to audiobooks now. It's great. You know, there's quite a few free or very cheap services. I think Audible is great, the subscription model, you know, because it comes down to around £4.50 a book, which is amazing when you think, I remember paying £50 for books when you used to get them on CD. It was ridiculous. Yep. So, you know, picking up a book now for £4.50 or whatever it is on the subscription model, I'd be interested to see how much they are on Google Play. So, but yeah, another source, great thing.
Yeah, talking about having competition that can really help the consumer and drive down prices and be a good thing for us, I'm all for this. Anywhere that we can get more audiobooks, access to more audiobooks, I'm all for. I was quite surprised when I went to the premium version of TuneIn Radio, the app for iPhone, and it included audiobooks for that at $9.99 a month US. I'm like, wow, okay, more audiobooks. I'm, you know, that's not what I signed up for, but I'm glad it's another feature here. So yeah, anywhere we can get more audiobooks, I'm all in.
But I think TuneIn have dropped audiobooks now, which is interesting.
Did they just do that recently to me? Because I just read some a few weeks ago. So if they did, yeah, that's very recent. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of interesting, this, isn't it? This is what kind of annoys me, though. It's, you know, you get your, right, that's it, I've got my source, I'm all sorted, and then they stop. Oh, right, okay.
That's why I have Audible as a backup, so.
Yeah, well, exactly. Of course, I should say, because those upstairs will kick me if I don't, of course, RNIB Audio Library, the audiobook library, you know, is free. It's not just audio books, actually. You can get books in giant print and braille as well, and it's completely free lending library. So, you know, that's one you should seriously consider, because you don't pay anything for it. Why would you want not to do that? But, you know, let's be frank about it. You know, sometimes there are books that come out that aren't always available. I wanted the Hillary Clinton book when it came out. What happened? It wasn't available instantly in the RNIB Talking Books library. So, you know, I got it on Audible. That's the world we're in. You know, there has to be. But at least there was an option out there for me.
Exactly.
Which wasn't the case a few years ago.
Exactly right. It's the same thing here in the US. We have Bard, very similar to what RNIB offers, where we get audiobooks as well as Braille and printed books. And again, if it doesn't show up in there right away, then I just go to Audible if I want to read it faster.
Okay, so great news about audiobooks. Amazon are bringing Alexa to Android with iOS support coming soon. Basically, what they've done is inside the Android app, the Amazon Alexa app you download, there's now a button that you can press and you can talk to she who probably shouldn't be named. And apparently the same will come with iOS support, which means the same in the app that you get. So you can, instead of actually having to go out and buy an Amazon Echo device, you can use your phone if you wanted to do that. I'll tell you what's great about that. Drop-in, that feature where you can talk to people just by dropping into their, you know, living room or whatever, unannounced, that can be really useful. And of course, because you've got a camera on your phone, if they've got an Echo Show or an Echo Spot, which is the smaller Amazon cute little alarm clocky thing,
technical
then,
term,
you know, technical term, yes, the Amazon clock. I love how I rename all Amazon products. I just think I'm getting into this. So the if you've got the Amazon clock, then you can talk to it via this device. How bizarre. But yeah, so that's all quite good.
About time is all I can say on that. They should have done that ages ago.
Agreed.
Great. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were making a joke about the clock. See, about time.
Oh, right. Clever. I missed that one.
Oh, see,
sorry.
The potential there. The potential for that to be funny. And it just... Right, okay. So I wanted to mention this because last week, we should have mentioned this last week. I actually got an email from Trudy Strauss over at Orcam. To tell me about this fantastic news that their MyEye 2 wearable device has been recognised after winning a Last Gadget Standing competition at the Consumer Technology Awards at CES this year. Basically, this is a device which you've probably heard of. It's the glasses with the little camera attached. It's for people who are blind or partially sighted or anyone who actually has reading problems, and helps someone to instantly read text off any surface. You can also recognize faces, banknotes, and products. So, you know, really good product, well worth a try. If you haven't got one or have been thinking about some way of doing it, you don't have to hold a magnifier. Great for someone who might have difficulty with their hands or just generally, you know, wants to have something to move around with. Then this could be really good for you. So, you know, the Orcam MyEye 2 recognized at CES, good news.
Yeah, Stephen, I saw this report out of CS as well, and I thought this was really great for the Orcam and what this product does. I haven't actually gotten my hands on it to really have anybody test it with me yet, but from everything I read, it sounds like it's a good product, does a good job, and for them to be able to win that type of award at CES is a pretty big deal. So this is a product to kind of watch out for, absolutely.
Yeah, it is. I think, Sean, you know, irrespective of what your views are on the product or this kind of kit, the fact that it's getting this kind of international recognition is good, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm quite happy to say congratulations. Well deserved. It is a interesting bit of kit. I do have my reservations about it. Again.
Of course you do.
Of course I do. I've got my concerns, as throughout this episode.
look, you're a worried. You're a worrying guy.
I am.
I get that.
Specialized tech, the limitations we've said about all this before, the cost, the hardware involved, the support is meant to be amazing. I suppose you could say that's what you're paying for, the support and training. But, you know, I don't know how long this sort of hardware can last for. Seeing AI, if you add some wearable specs with that, with a video camera, and you could pair them up, could that do the same thing? I don't know. But look, great bit of tech that's out there now, so congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that leads us on nicely to a couple of emails we've got. Oh, we need the jingle, guys. Press the button.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Right, let's get into the emails then. And Kowal Gugacoglu has been in touch with us, who says, "Hi, guys. A few months ago, I purchased Seeing AI and could not use it at all. However, when I got my iPhone 10, I was able to set up Face ID after many attempts. Today, I thought I would have another go at Seeing AI. Well, now I can scan documents and more. I am so confident with it that I have sold my iPal scanning reader, which is a scan standalone product that speaks." Yeah. Wow. She says, "Progress for us, but not for the companies that provide specialist products for the visually impaired." Thank you, Kowal. That ties in rather nicely to what you've just been saying, Sean.
Now, I'm interested into why it didn't work before. What sort of phone or product was she using before that it didn't work? So I don't know what the minimum device specifications is for Seeing AI, but I would have thought it worked on pretty much anything.
A couple of our listeners who've been in touch regarding Seeing AI, the iPhone SE is the one that seems to cause the most problems. So I think part of the issue is that it gets very warm. It's maybe not, you know, the phone gets very warm. The app maybe doesn't have some of the functions that just doesn't work as well. I don't know, but you know, it seems to be obviously that the newer phone will do it, and obviously the iPhone 10 has a much better camera. So, you know.
Oh, come on.
Well,
now, I hear people say this all the time. The camera really doesn't matter.
Well, it does. Anything it does when you're trying to scan OCR.
Yeah, but no. The standard of cameras we get today, it doesn't matter. Even the worst camera out there is still more than enough for OCR.
Rubbish.
Anything above 5 megapixel is fine. As long as you've got a flash, you're fine. No, it's not rubbish, Stephen. Don't spoil it. We've been lovely so far.
And to Sean's point, even if it wasn't the OCR, they did say it didn't work at all. So that would mean the product barcode scanning wasn't working, or you know, some of the other features. So that's something that, I mean, I've been able to scan barcodes on my iPhone since the 3GS, I think, or at least the 4 or 4S. So, so even just that part of it should have been working on any iPhone, not just a recent phone. Even if it was an OCR issue with a better camera, other parts of the app should have been working. So I agree. It's interesting that it wasn't working before and is now, but either way, good for them, and it is working, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Okay, well, thank you, Kowal, for that. Hello, Stephen and team. This one from Julian. He says, "You will not know the answer to this." Well, that's not the first time. But some of your listeners might. Okay, guys, it's over to you then. For some time, I have been a member of Caliber Audio Library using their posted memory stick service. Recently, they released their Cal Download app, so I thought I would give it a go. Unfortunately for me, it does not work. It comes up with an input keyboard and an edit field to enter my membership number into, but despite TalkBack announcing the keys correctly, no amount of keyboard hammering will put anything into the edit box. Obviously, the first thing I did was call Caliber. Lovely, helpful, and friendly people, one and all. A big virtual group hug to them all, but all they could tell me was that they had tried the app on an Android phone and it worked for them. I have tried it on two phones now, both running Android 6. I realise this is a bit behind the curve now, perhaps that's the problem, but I was wondering if other listeners have had a similar problem, or am I just very unlucky? Regards, Julian. That is definitely a question, guys, we cannot answer, but I don't think any of us are with Caliber, are we?
No, and I'm not with Android, so I could just download the app and test it out. You've got an Android phone though, Stephen, have you?
Yeah, but it's in a drawer, along with most things in my life, along with my personality. No, I don't have it handy. But I don't have Caliber anyway. I'm not signed up to Caliber. But certainly, this is something which, you know, I think our listeners can definitely help with. So, if anyone out there is using Caliber, I'm sure you will be. Then, you know, can you get in touch with us and tell us what you think? TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. I didn't nearly forget it. Honest. Right, Kelly Muggeridge. Hi, gang. Happy New Year to you all. God, can we still say that?
Happy New Year. Thank you. That's nice.
It is nice. Thank you, Kelly. Well, she says, I wonder if there are any blind and partially sighted people out there who remembers the Opticon and still uses one. I remember having Opticon training while at school, and I found it fascinating. It was a device that was about the size of a tape recorder, which had a handheld camera, which is about the size of a penknife. The user would place their index finger of their left hand on the onto a template of this device, and then run the handheld camera across the printed page of a document. It would vibrate, turning the print into tactile, allowing the user to read normal documents such as a bank statement and so on. You basically had each letter which became tactile. Now, at that time, during the 70s and 80s, it was the only reading machine that enabled you to access printed materials. However, and you can imagine that technology in the 70s and 80s probably did have one or two disadvantages, it certainly did. One was that it was fairly slow to read a page of a document, and the other, it was rather noisy. Wasn't all tech in the 70s noisy?
Yeah, really.
Kelly says, I read on Wikipedia that the Opticon became obsolete in 1996, and she says, in a way, I wish that it was revived, as it does have its uses. Although text-to-speech is fantastic and I couldn't do without it, it doesn't give children of today's society who are blind or partially sighted the real opportunity of what sighted letters look and feel like. You used to be able to read someone's handwriting with the Opticon. She said, I wish someone would come up with something similar, because let's face it, they know what Braille is, but they don't know print. I don't have the Opticon anymore because you can't get parts for it and it doesn't fit in very well in the 21st century. She says, the Opticon actually taught me how to write my signature because I knew the shape of each letter. She says, it needs reviving because blind and partially sighted children need to be educated more. I certainly benefited from it. I wonder if others feel the same. Any thoughts? Well, thank you, Kelly, from West Sussex. I am aware of this, I think, because, you know, I vaguely remember this kind of thing when I was at school. I had a couple of blind friends at school who used this kind of equipment. I don't know if it was the Opticon, though, but I do remember a piece of kit that you could use. Maybe it was. I don't remember it. I certainly don't remember its name. But I understand that the idea, you would sort of hold this over and it would effectively turn everything to tactile. It was an incredible little thing. And I think that's a really good point, actually. You know, we talk about Braille and how important Braille is for literacy, but is it important that we, or blind people who are completely blind, understand what the written word looks like? I think that's an interesting debate.
Yeah, that's a really good email. I don't know that device myself, but it sounds really interesting. Sounds like that would be a really good application, you know, something that could take an image and, as you said, make it tactile. That sounds really good. And the name is amazing. That sounds like a superhero or something. But,
Opticon.
I'm surprised that there is there's nothing like that now. That does sound like an interesting piece of tech.
Yeah, it does.
It is really interesting. And about the time that this was going obsolete was, well, at least right before then, was when my vision was starting to go. So I never was able to get into this device and use it. I have heard of it, but I've never actually used it or done anything with it. But I agree, guys. This is a really good point, an excellent email, because I do think it is true that someone who is, you know, blind, either younger or since birth, or anybody who maybe hasn't been familiar with handwriting or the printed word, that can be maybe a help in understanding text and printed word, or even handwriting, like she said in the email. So it is a wonder why something like this isn't available now. I understand that for the purposes of reading and getting access to print, it may not be necessary anymore, but just for that educational purpose, it's interesting. So this might be one of those specialist tech areas where maybe this is something that could be very useful.
Yeah, I agree. Graham Roby's been in touch as well. Hi, guys. He says, listening to the podcast each week, I was interested in your comments made on a couple of occasions regarding Dell laptops. I think I know where he's going here. I was very much in the market to buy a Dell XPS 13 until I heard you'd run into issues. Could you elaborate as to what those issues were? I use NVDA and JAWS, so magnification problems wouldn't be a concern. Oh, by the way, great podcast. Love the wit on the show, which makes it among my most anticipated listens of the week. You and the team keep up the great work. Thank you, Graham.
I was trying to think where the wit was. Yeah. Did I miss that week?
So that was me.
that was the week you were off, Sean.
Clearly thinking of a different podcast. The Dell XPS 13, yes, I did have one, and I did run into a few problems. Let me explain a little bit about what happened. What I found was there was a I made a big mistake when I bought it, because I bought the version that had a 4K screen.
Why?
Because I thought that if I was using Zoom, like magnification or whatever, or Zoom text, or even the built-in magnifier, that it would just be so much better. Well, it was to a point. It certainly made a big difference if you need the screen. It does make a big difference. The downside, though, is as I started using Jaws, the 4K screen and the drivers for it, the sort of technology behind it that makes it all work, Jaws just couldn't play nicely with the drivers. And it meant that when you were using the Jaws software on the screen, you know how Jaws focuses in on parts of the screen and it reads what it focuses on. Well, because the screen was too big for Jaws, essentially, there was too much on the screen and it wasn't able to read it properly, that was the issue. Jaws just didn't make any sense. Huge amounts of graphic issues as well. I did think there was something maybe wrong with the machine, actually, at one point, but I was assured by Dell that there was no issue with it, that it may be, in fact, Jaws itself, because Jaws comes with its own window screen drivers.
Mirror drivers, yeah, intercepts
mirror,
the graphics.
Mirror drivers, right.
So that could have been an issue.
And it renders what it sees. And I think that was a big problem. So what I would say to you is, if you're thinking about going down the route, avoid the 4K one. But then again, maybe the new version of Jaws has taken that into account. There's more 4K monitors now out there. But it is something to consider. I would avoid 4K monitors at all stages at the moment, because I think that's perhaps what Jaws had its issue with me. And it became unbearable for me, because the screen was constantly... What it was doing was it was actually flashing, which for someone with nystagmus is not great.
I'm sure not, no.
So it would just constantly flash at you. And I thought, oh, screw that. So it gets sold. That was my reasons. So I hope that helps you, Graham. I will say, though, brilliant machine otherwise. And, you know, the new one will probably be brilliant. But if it's 4K, look at something else. Right. Rebecca has been in touch as well. She says, hi, guys. I'm thinking of buying a Chromebook. Have you used them or know anyone who has? And what are your thoughts on ChromeVox, which is the screen reader built in? Thank you, Rebecca. Well, guys, any of you considered a Chromebook in the past?
No. Now, right. The first thing that jumps into my mind is very limited. ChromeVox is a limited screen reader. But that said, it depends on your usage. You know, what do you want to use this for? Is it just a little bit of browsing, maybe, the odd email? Then it could be more than enough. But I got to say, I do think from an accessibility point of view, it's got a lot better, but I think the Chromebook is still lagging far behind.
Yeah, I agree. When it comes to accessibility, the ChromeVox isn't going to be what you're expecting. Maybe if you've used NVDA or JAWS, might be more kind of a narrator clone, maybe if not even that much than anything. But if you're looking for something that's simplistic and easy and isn't going to be real involved, like Sean was saying, if you're just going to surf the internet a little bit, type some things here and there, you're not using it for a lot of in-depth kind of things, then yeah, it might be fine, might do just fine, but it just depends on the use case, really.
Well, what I would suggest you do, Rebecca, is do what I did, unlike those two. I checked out a blog by Blind Bytes called My First Chromebook, What I've Learned, and it's from a guy called Steve at Blind Bytes. I don't know if it's his blog or whether it's a group collaboration, I don't know how it works, but Blind Bytes, the blog, check it out, it's on WordPress. And this guy explains in great detail as to how he got into his Chromebook with his thoughts, his concerns at first. And I think all of the things that Tim and Sean have said are right. I think that there's this idea of simplicity about it. But what is interesting is that, yes, it is simplistic, but then it comes back to that fundamental point of what are you going to do with it? If it's purely for web browsing, it's fine. And arguably, it's probably a safer device to use than a Windows PC or a Mac, because you can't download anything. You can't bring anything down to your computer. So as a result, you can't get viruses as easily, although I don't know if that's something that, you know, might... I'm sure the hackers will find a way in somehow and destroy it from the within. But so far, it seems to be a fairly simple device. And... you know, what I did also read this week, which I thought was interesting, is that I think it's Acer have been spotted with a new Chrome OS tablet that might be doing the rounds quite soon. Also, Dell have announced, mentioning Dell earlier, well, Dell have announced a new range, 5000 series of Chromebooks, mainly aimed, if I'm honest, at the education market. That seems to be where these are aimed at. But the fact is they do have, you know, Chromevox built in. The new version of Chromevox is called Chromevox Next. And if you go onto that blog, there's not just a review of the Chromebook itself and how Steve's got on with it, but also useful resources in there on how to learn Chromevox so that, you know, people like Tim and Sean don't sit and say it's basic and simple. That's what I'm saying. Right. Plus, hope that helps, Rebecca.
Plus, I've never touched one, so I could be totally wrong. I mean, it may have
well,
got
I
a
have.
Lot better.
No, I have. I have, true. In fairness. And I have to say I wasn't massively impressed because first experience I got of it was button, button, button.
Exactly.
And I thought, well, if that's that, then we're finished. So hopefully things have changed. I don't know. But anyway, check out the blog. I urge you to read it. Tell us your thoughts on it. We might even try and get Steve on the show if he's interested. Steve would be great to come on and tell us his thoughts on Chromebooks because it's not an area we've touched massively. So perhaps we should. Well, listen, more tips next week. Lots more from Dot to Dot, of course. Claire Potter's back with us next week and much more besides. And, of course, whatever news falls into our inbox in between then and now. Plus, lots of your emails, hopefully, as well. It is not the same without you. Get in touch. And, you know, if you can help out with some of our queries this week, that would be great. You can email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tim and Sean, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
And guys, don't forget the podcast's always available. You'll find it on iTunes, Audioboom, anywhere you get podcasts. Check it out online. Or you can find all the information about the show at rnibconnectradio.org.uk. Catch you next week.